So welcome to episode 125 of Fancy Ramen. I'm Neil.
And I'm Scott.
And Cookie is out. He is on vacation.
He's on birthday leave.
Birthday leave. That's the one time you get out of the podcast, right?
Yeah, we actually don't have any sort of like family grievance leave or anything like that, but birthdays are very important at Fancy Ramen Incorporated.
Mm-hmm. The 401k plan's pretty good too.
Yeah.
Sick leave, not a thing. Yeah, so best wishes to Cookie. Hope you travel safely and all that.
Yep.
What have you been up to this week, Scott?
I just got done with a pretty long stint camping over the 4th of July weekend, which was pretty awesome. Did not see a single firework, which honestly may be a more impressive thing than witnessing fireworks on this holiday to celebrate our nation's birth of independence. Let's see. Any other interesting stuff? Not really.
I mean, it should be very good that there are no fireworks while you were camping, because I'm assuming like you're in a wooded area.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a really irresponsible thing to fire fireworks off in, you know, like national forest lands. Did that mean it didn't happen? Absolutely not. I heard plenty of fireworks. I just didn't see any. Yeah. Bunch of people were lighting them off within at least a mile or two from where we were camped because we could hear them quite clearly. I'm not sure if there was a huge amount of things I did otherwise. I mean, I finally, which we'll talk about I think later in the chat, I finally finished the television series of Neon Genesis Evangelion.
I put
in about 2 to 3 episodes a night, and then kind of marathon the last like 6 after camping.
So
I thought that maybe what I'd do, because I remember you mentioning that after the end of the television show, it was another 7 or so years until they did something.
A couple years at least, right?
So. Okay, yeah. So 20 years later, they finally made like a follow-up. But many people had grown old and died since then.
Obviously not 20 years. But yeah, no. Just to detail exactly what happened, I'm not going to look up the dates, and I could be wrong, so correct me if I am, people listening. But the original series gets aired, which there are some complications with funding and so forth. And then a period of time passes, and they release the first movie, which is legitimately just a recap with a few added footage that gives you no extra information aside from speculation of what could happen. And then a period of time passes, and then they release the movie that is the ending of the series.
So is it worth watching the recap movie then?
No,
or probably not.
It's totally not worth it.
Okay, so as soon as I actually pick up the recap movie, then I should put it down immediately.
Yeah, so I think that's end of Evangelion. I think I was wrong, or I was definitely wrong on past episodes. What you want to watch now is Death and Rebirth, or maybe it's just called Death.
Okay, yeah.
But I don't know. Are you ready to talk about Evangelion to like a great extent now? Because
yeah.
I feel like this is something worth talking about and worth dedicating maybe half this episode to. It might be a short episode regardless.
Yeah, I think I'm totally there. I just wanted to make sure that when I talked about this, it was before getting everything, so I could take it from the perspective of, I guess, fans who had completed it and had no other content to turn to. We'll pretend, I'll pretend as though no other content exists, right?
Right.
Or at least that's all I'm aware of at this point, so it's fine. And I have somehow still remained completely spoiler-free of anything having to do outside of the television series. So I feel like actually my isolation is a benefit for this discussion.
So before we let you off the chains here, Neon Genesis Evangelion is about a boy that gets essentially thrown into a situation where he has to combat angels, and there is a finite number of angels that he fights throughout the series, and you know by the end of the series that he has beaten the last angel. Beaten's kind of a weird word for that
yeah,
one, right?
I mean, he may have beaten the angel earlier, but with the new Netflix translations. It's a little more abstract.
But the original ending of the series takes, like, you can't even call it like you can't call it a twist or a turn or anything because it's completely out of nowhere, right?
Are you talking about how the last two episodes seemingly have no transition into their content? Yeah, I honestly was really confused when the penultimate or second to last episode started, and I thought, what did I miss? What am I missing? I went back and double checked, and it was like, oh no, I'm supposed to be here, and I am supposed to be lost and confused and along for the ride in this stream of consciousness. But I had definitely thought I had missed something critical that had just happened like seconds beforehand that explained how we went from like up until that point, a pretty like logical progress through the story to something that was much more abstract.
Spoiler gates be opened. So if you haven't watched Evangelion and you want to watch Evangelion spoiler free, stop listening right now.
And go find it on Netflix or wherever. I totally endorse this show, even after what I imagine many people think is a very jarring and weird ending. Like, I'm into it. I think that this is worth watching. So if people want to avoid spoilers, they just gotta pocket this episode for later, because it's gonna be good talk.
So I could be wrong, but like the very last scene in the third to last episode is Shinji holding Kaoru, right?
Yes, for what seems to be an entire minute of only audio like transitioning. Like
operatic thematic yeah. music, yeah.
There's background music that's very operatic. It's angelic. It's very mature, like church choir kind of sound, and that's it. Otherwise it's like a still image, and if you thought they had budgetary concerns, you could completely pin it on some of the decisions that they make in the last couple episodes with just recycling images. But I guess they do a good job with it, considering the fact that the animation, there's like very little actually by the very end of the show. It's at least artistically cogent and sound, even if it's like dynamically quite still. And it's a lot of just like flash cuts from thing to thing to thing. Episode, it would be 24, ends with Shinji holding Kaoru for about a minute and then crushing him to where his head pops off at the very, very end of the 24th episode.
And like, I could be wrong, I think it like it cuts to black and then it cuts out of black to the image of the whatever that pool of water is with his head falling into it,
and then it's
a cut back to black as well after that, right?
That's right. No, I'm pretty sure that is correct, and it's a silhouette of the head too, like, you know what head it is.
Yeah, but so I'm also curious too if any effect is lost to you, because the ending song in Evangelion has traditionally been Fly Me to the Moon,
yeah.
Which apparently is still in other countries, or at least specifically Japan, on the Netflix Japanese release, I guess.
But is that a copyright issue?
Yeah, we weren't able, or they weren't able to secure it for America, and I'm assuming Europe for that matter, and other nations. So it's such a crazy contrast seeing essentially what is the final crazy scene, or cognizant world crazy scene,
mm-hmm.
of essentially this character that is very polarizing, I'm assuming, amongst the fan base as to what he is and what his purpose is. But to see his death, or to see the immediate after effect of his death, and then have it cut immediately to Frank Sinatra, Fly Me to the
Fly
Moon
me
being
to
sung
the
by
moon.
Japanese voice actresses.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think there's like a next episode preview either.
No. There's no preview for the next episode. There's also no actually that's tricky with Netflix, because Netflix skips you to the next episode as soon
as
the credits start rolling. So I didn't actually watch any of the next episode previews. I know some shows will have an after episode skit or like a little teaser that happens, and sometimes they have essential or like really valuable information that if you don't hang around till the end of the credits, you really miss out. I don't remember there being anything like that with Evangelion, so I didn't bother looking for it. I would normally skip to just to the next episode. The next episode starts with a bunch of Shinji's teammates at NERV being like dead. It looks like each one was executed by a gunshot. And I can't remember. I think Ikari, Gendo.
Yep, Gendo.
He's the only person who's alive, and he's talking about how it was his plan to like return everything to nothingness. And like that's the only really like guided dialogue we get to do any sort of scene setting or building before we get into the like stream of consciousness of Shinji Ikari and his fellow EVA pilots essentially like confront their traumas for the next like two episodes straight.
In which at some point it shifts focus entirely to Shinji.
Yeah.
But in all three cases, it's kind of like it's almost like the worst therapy session ever.
Because you're in a therapist's room, but there's no therapist. It's like if the therapist invited you into their office and then locked the door behind you and you're stuck in the room until you're better.
And so like the mental state of each of these characters is so bad that what they envision are people that they know and love, essentially chastising them for every single thing they've done in their lives, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Chastising them for the actions that they've taken up during the course of the series, through their past, essentially being forced to relive previous traumas as well. And obviously this comes after the realization or the reveal that Rey is actually a clone of or more or less a genetic clone with some variation of Shinji's mom.
Yeah. It's funny how much background information gets revealed at the very end, and yet how little I still understood. Like, I had an assumption about Rey being some sort of clone or like genetic experiment with angels pretty early in the show, but there's like almost nothing for it for a very long time. And then the last like 3 to 4 episodes, it's like, okay, here's actually all the information we're willing to reveal about Rey all at once.
Yeah.
And then now here is her like internal dialogue or mental trauma to being not human in a traditional sense, or yeah, like being born in a non-traditional sense and therefore not having I don't know, the usual like sincere assuredness of how human you are. Like she's struggling with trying to determine if she's really all that human or not, and what separates her from being more of a biological entity like the angels versus, you know, a human with a soul, with an individuality, which I think is probably the most interesting of the three pilots and their traumas, mostly because it's the most unique. It's not something that, I guess with Asuka and Shinji, like viewers, there will be viewers who will have similar or traumas of the exact type or flavor, I guess, of what they experience. And so they'll be able to directly relate with the characters. Rey is impossible to relate with because, as far as I know, none of us are at large watching anime after also being, you know, a clone or a homunculus of some sort. And if you are, you know, good job for being so discreet about your existence. Like, that's impressive in its own right. I'm trying to think. I don't remember the order, Neil. If it goes, I think it goes like a cursory glance at Shinji, and then Asuka, and then Rey, and then back to Shinji.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay. Yeah, but I can't remember the exact progression. But I don't know if we need to go into necessarily the distinct elements of, I don't know, Asuka's trauma defines her characteristics and attitudes a lot. And it's tough to watch. She has one loop where she essentially goes through like four critical moments and like chastises or berates herself in each one over and over. And I think the cycle loops like three or four times. And there's, I think a lot of this construction, you know, comes from a very real familiarity with like mental health, anxiety and depression, because this person is stuck in a logical loop that I think is pretty common for people experiencing like trauma, self-loathing, depression, anxiety. And Asuka's just, I think, describes her character, but I don't know if it lends anything else except for allows us to understand her a little bit better. But I also thought, since she was the most vocal and kind of active character in the show when it came to expressing their emotions or their feelings, if even in a superficial way, like we already kind of understood that about her without needing that background as much. It still helps to have the full context of who she is, though, through that. But then we move to, I think, the point you wanted to get to, Shinji and his... Shinji and his insecurities about himself, his lack of any form of like self-confidence or his ability to perceive intrinsic value in himself. But he's completely incapable of it. Something else that, you know, if you have anxiety or depression, may sound like may be a familiar topic. And so we find out that like that impacts now the way that the world is comprised. Like this is what I had, maybe this is what I could use the most clarification on, is it Shinji accessed something at the end of episode 24, or I guess in episode 25, that causes him to shape the world to his perceptions? Or is it just from his internal, like this, or is this all from his internal view? And we're just getting a very like introspective, like mental lens with our last two episodes, because it almost seems like maybe they touch they mention a Pandora's box kind of situation. It's like, did Shinji touch this Pandora's box that now his consciousness is kind of the only thing that will make or break reality, and it's going to be a reflection of his like internal thoughts and his subconscious, even against his will?
It's kind of hard for me to answer, because for one thing, I don't necessarily want to give away anything that happens in Death and Rebirth. I also like having really fully consumed Evangelion like media aside from the manga a few years back, or more than a few years back at this point, but I don't know exactly how I would really gauge a lot of this with like an adult perspective now. But I can say that again, like, who knows? If I watched everything again and got to this part and realized that it was had some fuller meaning, that could be, you know, who actually knows there. But I believe the context of these last two episodes are we are literally just inside the heads of each of these characters.
Okay.
Which, I mean, explains, you know, even some of the simplest issues that you would have with the theory that perhaps this world in some way represents like reality. For instance, one of his friends still having, you know, all of his limbs during the congratulations scene. I'm hoping that's essentially how they translated it. I don't think there's any other way to better translate the final episode or the final scene in the series.
My final show note does say congratulations, Scott. So yeah, they didn't change that at all.
So like, yeah, I mean, none of this seems realistic. Like none of this seems like it could take place within any sort of material world, right?
It has to be metaphysical or a mental landscape, I guess.
But what I can say is that the footage that you saw at the start of episode 24, in which you see dead people, mm-hmm. lots of dead people, is definitely something that is happening. So I guess I can say this. What I've always believed is that that episode 24, wait, 25 and 26, sorry?
Yeah, 25 and 26 are all mental.
Yeah, so they're the episodes that are going on in Shinji's head from here on out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the exact, I mean, ignoring the Asuka and Rei Ayanami parts, these are the part, this is essentially what is playing out in his head from here on out. So while it's not necessarily a direct continued narrative for us, because we have been seeing like an outer layer of the story, we've essentially been seeing this from like a third party perspective, mm-hmm. with some limited degree of omnipotence, I guess. It's like after 24, we no longer see the series through the eyes of an outsider, but instead we see the rest of the story through directly through Shinji's head.
Yeah, it's almost psyche. As though you stop watching Neon Genesis Evangelion and you literally enter a character instead.
Yeah.
It loses all of its structural properties as like a show at that point.
Which, if you think about the main point to take from this, which is that Hideaki Anno, the director and writer, is going through severe and terrible depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the series, but definitely starting to like dive bomb into this even worse and worse towards the end of the series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it kind of makes sense, I guess, that
it's manifested in the art, right?
Yeah, and that like the last episode, whether like obviously who's to say what his personal like emotions or feelings were by the very end of the Evangelion TV series, but like that episode may have been essentially just a desire to break free of those things that like have been plaguing him as well as Shinji and Asuka this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rei, a lot of Rei's, we'll say like trials going on through her head feel somewhat, I don't know, it's kind of weirder to tackle that because like in some essence, the show vindicates that she is indeed a person regardless of her status as a clone,
mm-hmm.
because the existence of the Evangelion's like prerequisites for pilots
is to have a soul.
Exactly. So even though the dummy plugs are basically just Rei's, like they still work
because using her soul.
Yeah, but the problem more so, like the specific problem that they encounter using the dummy plug is more about the synchronization, which have you been able to figure out anything like behind the mysteries of the Eva yet? The Eva units themselves?
You mean that the Evas are actually I already had a very robust feeling that as soon as I found out that they had Adam and then they had Evas, I thought, oh, okay, these have to be like these have to come from their contact with Adam in one way or another. And then when you find out Adam's literally kept in the basement, I was like, oh, okay, they're literally this may be like a cloning or essentially like taking a component of Adam and creating Eves from it. I think by the end of the television series, what you know is that they are they're beings created from Adam, but they also are like an empty vessel. They're like a homunculus in a sense. They lack a soul, and so they need the they need a pilot to I guess add that. Like that's how they are able to control the agency of these things. But at the same time, we see that they with the like berserk mode or actually I think there are several occasions where like Shinji isn't necessarily doing any piloting and the Evas kind of operating on its own. But I don't know if that's because it's co-opting him as a resource to like exert its own will, or if it's responding to like Shinji's like subconscious or like more primal desires or like feelings in combat, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to understand the exact connection. So I'd like to hear if you know more.
The problem is I honestly don't know what's revealed in the movie, or like I don't remember even how I figured or how I learned about the connection between the Evas, like the specific Evas and their pilots.
Okay.
Like, so I'm not going to speak too much on that. That'll be something that maybe we can talk about later. But like,
I would say that there is no indication that the Evas are connected to the pilots, except for the sense that when they do the dummy plug insertion, like after Shinji refuses to pilot because he found out that his son of a bitch father overrode his controls and made him try and kill his friend, that I think he leaves like some sort of imprint on the Eva that essentially makes it impossible for Rey, or as we now know, clone Reys and the dummy plugs to operate. She even comments like, oh, this smell, like it smells like Shinji in here. And then when she's in again, it's just like this Eva, or like the will of Shinji lives on in this Eva that he's no longer piloting.
Shinji says some very like damning things when he's interacting with the Eva, like earlier in the series, I think. Like he describes what it feels like to be inside of the Eva, that I think is probably one of the bigger clues as to the part of the explanation. But yeah, you really do kind of have to like grab at straws and hope you figure out what it is, because I don't know how you would deduce getting to this point, but I could be wrong. But another thing to point out is that even during Asuka's, I kind of like her period of time where she's unable to pilot the Eva, which I think is like basically the last third,
yeah,
or so of the series, right?
She gets some sort, like she has a mental disconnection. She has like a performance anxiety that just worsens, at least for like the last three Angel fights.
Do they ever try using Rey or the dummy plugs in Eva unit? Is that three or two? Eva unit three?
I think it's two. Three gets destroyed in transit or whatever. Or three, right. No, and three is what what's his name? I can't remember. The jockish friend of Shinji's pilots and gets taken over by the angel.
Zero's is Rey's, one is Shinji's.
Yeah, two is Asuka. Yeah. And Asuka, yeah, Asuka has essentially difficulties piloting her Eva after getting decapitated in the angel assault that tries to make it into Central Dogma. And that's actually, like, that's really, the pacing for this show is so damn good. Like, it just, like, the lulls happen at the most perfect opportunities. Kind of the, like, unknown frequency at which the angels can strike kind of allow the writers for this show, right, to have really worked in tension and action whenever they needed it. But also allowed for like character development and building periods and like rebuilding of areas in a realistic format. Like there's plenty of downtime for us to experience the characters outside of their context as explicitly pilots. That's really good. The last maybe six or seven episodes of this show, though, are just, I mean, incredibly fast. There's a 1 month period I think that takes place during it, but they essentially, each scene occurs during a day, and so it's like day one scene, day two scene, day three scene, and then it's skipped to like day seven and then day 30, day 31. But besides that, like everything that's happening is happening at an incredibly rapid pace. And then they're also, at some points, jumping backwards on the timeline, at least for an episode or two. And so they're just fitting so much like content in the story building and the progression of like the conclusion of this show in these last couple chunks. It's a huge information dump, but it's so very good. And it's so well paced. Like, I never felt overwhelmed, and I never felt like underprovided either.
So when you break it all down, like, obviously you know that there's more to see, but if you could distance yourself from that for a second, how does it feel having what should otherwise be like a regular conclusion to a show you imagine get essentially replaced by what is this weird inner therapy session for Shinji Ikari?
Yeah, and then finally finishing with what I think is almost like a self or like a mental help PSA at the very end of the show.
I am worth living or something. I don't remember what like the actual final lines are.
Yeah. It is the realization like, oh, I don't need to define myself by this. Mm-hmm. Like, I should try and like myself regardless how I feel right now. Like, I must have value. If I want people to like me, I must have value, and I must have value if people like me. It's a little more eloquent than that, but I think not by much, because we are ultimately getting, the self-therapy session of like a 14-year-old. I'm not upset. I'm actually not that frustrated. It's weird. It's like, it's the kind of ending that I think I am still stewing on. But the finality, I guess, the conclusion of killing the final angel, I don't know what else they can really like pitch into that. The only other option I see is the Studio Trigger approach, where they say it was aliens the whole time, but we already knew that
kind
from
of
the
aliens,
start
right?
of the show.
Heavenly aliens.
It feels like they leave a lot of stuff up for interpretation or questioning. And once again, coming from the background of someone who adores the Soulsborne series, it's like I'm comfortable with information remaining unprovided or unsaid. I feel like a nuanced consumer can try to apply their own theory to it. And as long as they find something that fits within the grooves well enough, you can find some way to satisfy yourself. I wouldn't be upset with a more concrete ending. I wouldn't say that it absolutely has to end this way. This is perfect. Do not change it. It is immutable. But I'm not upset by it. I'm not frustrated. I don't have that many problems. People who seem to have a problem with the character of Shinji as a whole, and I think therefore are most likely going to then carry that forward, and the fact that the solution is just Shinji like finding self-worth in the last couple episodes. If you didn't like the character from the start and you're in for the robot battles, like, you're probably going to find this very underwhelming, very frustrating, because you didn't give a shit about that character in the first
place.
And
it's probably extremely frustrating
for
those
not
fans because
interpersonal level.
Like, the mecha battles are not your typical mecha battles, at least leading up to that point in anime in general. There's like,
They're short and sweet.
They're short, they're sweet, they're full of acrobatics and flair. Like the episode where Shinji and Asuka essentially
do the dance.
Exactly. Essentially learn to tango together in battle. To defeat the twin angel cores or whatever the actual justification
is. Yeah, no,
is.
You're right. It's a twin core angel. They do the double dive kick, and then they end up sprawled together at the end, upset because they didn't stick the landing. It's the robot battles aren't like anything else. Every fight is unique in its own way as well. Like the solution to it is sometimes overcoming a mental barrier. Another time it's a clever tactic that Misato figures out, or it's a like last ditch brute force strategy with the angel going berserk. Like there is a very refreshing variety. It doesn't feel like we have the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure where it's like, I have outwitted my opponent at the last second. Like, we're in dire straits and I've actually done something that's brilliant to turn the tables every single time. Instead, it really does like flip between all different sorts of completion states that are independent of one another. And I think also lend to the fact that this show is so good because there's so many wonderful and deep and complex characters that are all contributing to resolutions throughout each episode. Just because Shinji is the main pilot and the protagonist of the series, and literally the opening intro says, "Become legend, young boy," it's like he is not the only character of value or interest in the show. Like, there are just as many episodes that are solved by Shinji's like direct actions or choices as there are that come from Asuka or Rei or Misato or even Gendo. Like, everybody takes a turn like providing the interesting material and resolutions in the show, which I think is also another reason why I'm just so impressed by it. Is there's lots of shows with great characters, but even then it's normally like one or two characters take the stage for driving the plot forward all the time and making all the big decisions and actions. And this is the first one where I thought it was the most believable, it was the most realistic in the sense that like not one person can have that big of an impact on the world, especially in a collaborative environment, like using a giant biological mecha that's been dug up from some weird shit. Like, there's too much going on in the show for one person to be the person with all of the answers or even all of the actions to progress the show.
You know, imagine being me in like the mid 90s, early 90s when these are being released to VHS.
So my hair's longer. Okay.
And your older brother going to pick up the just released VHS of Evangelion week in and week out, might even be months. I don't remember the exact time frame, but like then hurrying home from the mall and getting together and watching Ava together and getting that last VHS, which is episodes 25 and 26, and being so confused, befuddled.
I can only imagine the word is confused.
And then having to like seek out fan sub services back then, which actually meant like sending money in through mail, or we might have been able to use card like over phone or something or internet by that point, but they would ship us VHS tapes, and that's how we got our fill of, you know, end of Evangelion and Death and Rebirth, and also like the the disinterest starting, assuming this is the recap one, end of Evangelion, and realizing it's just a giant recap.
Oh yeah. That must have been very frustrating. But,
like, I don't know, I definitely realized at some point I probably wasn't going to rewatch it, but the more you've talked about it, the more I'm thinking I probably should. Like, I'm dying to see a lot of these stories, that a lot of the episodes that now I'm beginning to remember so dearly, like the sniper battle episode, the episode where they have to play catch, quote unquote.
Oh yeah, that's right.
The power outage episode. There's so many good episodes.
Yeah, every episode is very unique. That's another thing that's just so cool about it. It's the alien nature of the angels, like learning about humanity and therefore trying a different strategy or approach. And the first couple aren't that special. Like, I don't really give a shit about angels like 1 through 3 or whatever. It's I think when they get to 4, which I believe 4 is the like large just straight up polyhedron that starts drilling into it starts drilling into Nerve HQ. Like, that's when they start to get really interesting, because it's like their shapes are becoming less organic. They're becoming more abstract, and their approaches like just target these very like these very key vulnerabilities. And it just seems like it's so weird how the angels are just hitting them at like their weakest point at that moment. And it adds great tension to a show that still, for like all the combat and action, that's maybe 20% of the show or something. It's actually a very small amount. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what's really good too. Like One Punch Man, another anime that I just adore, the action and fight scenes are amazing, but honestly, most of that show is its humor and comedy. And I think it's kind of in the same way, where you have an expectation based on the like glance you have of it, or this overarching, just like simplistic perception of it. And then you realize that the truly like interesting and treasured content is actually not that at all.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. Good. I can't wait for you to watch Death and Rebirth, or just Death, whatever it is.
Yep. I'm wondering. I think I'll sit through the whole week without watching it, so I can have a tiny replication of how long people had to wait, and then I'll watch it right before the podcast next week.
Like, to scale, it probably would, because, you know, for 26 episodes, that would be 26 weeks. So you shrunk that down to 3 weeks.
I've done it
weeks,
in about a week.
And waiting one week till the movie is like, you know, half a year, something like that.
Yeah, this is not bad. I think I've done an excellent job on accident. So
perfect. So anime aside, GDQ, what have you been watching?
Yeah, I've been so passive this week. I haven't really played much for video games, and the playing that I have done has just been more Divinity Original Sin, and nothing noteworthy on that content just yet. But GDQ, I finally decided to watch the YouTube videos of the completed runs that I missed while I was camping or just during the week. And the Hollow Knight run was phenomenal. I watched that. That's I think all of these runs were like minor glitches only, no major glitches whatsoever. The Hollow Knight was super impressive, just to see the player who was doing this, I guess the speed runner, just complete these boss battles in record time with the most daring strategies I've ever seen. In order to do damage in Hollow Knight, for the most part, you have to be right next to your enemies, but it is a game all about positioning and platforming and moving out of the way of telegraphed enemy attacks. And these guys just essentially, I mean, especially for the Hollow Knight player, just hovering right next to the hitboxes of these bosses and just staying right next to them, to the point where if I were playing the game, I know I wouldn't be able to see what the bosses were doing, because I'd be so focused on where my knight was positioned. And it was really cool to watch that. It's also very funny to see how the hardest part about a lot of these games done quick games that are speedruns that have like challenging boss fights, it's never actually the boss fights that are the most challenging part. It's almost entirely the platforming or like map navigation, because every failure cuts time. And a lot of the times, especially in a game like Hollow Knight, where it takes a second or two for you to heal to restore back a single mask on your health bar, because your health bar is measured in masks instead of hearts, it wastes time. So these guys will essentially go to the breaking point without healing, because it will damage their time otherwise. And so they've got the straight up like classic Call of Duty, like the edges of the screen, the peripherals are blurring, and like the vision's going bad, and they're still dancing in the middle of a chaotic boss fight with, you know, one shot left, trying to complete it. But the Hollow Knight run was very good. I watched Dark Souls, and I was in the middle of watching Dark Souls 2 before we started recording. And that was another thing. These Dark Souls runs, it's mostly about watching all of the weird mechanistic glitches in what I think are otherwise like very well made games from Software. There were some weird glitches. Like, did you know that the primary function of a slope in Dark Souls is to like get you is to move the character model quickly to whatever the descent point is. It is more important than registering damage. And so there are ways to essentially initiate hitting a slope and then while falling in the slope, be able to create an opportunity to roll or do another action that gives you an unintentional iframe during the fall so you can drop straight through a map. And I found the only way I ever want to complete Blight Town now is through descent glitches, so you don't even have to play that part of the game. It's really fascinating. And then the boss fights are really interesting too when you're watching these guys play with minor mods where they switch a weapon and the moveset gets accidentally coded over from the rapier to the dragon's tooth. So they're like very lightly jabbing the dragon's tooth into Ornstein and Smough and finishing them in like 3 to 4 hits. It's really interesting. And then also like something that I think a more casual Dark Souls player can appreciate for both of these is these guys is just absolute control for knowing what does how much damage and how close their health bar is, because they're trying to like activate the like red teardrop ring that gives you the I think 20% or like 30% attack damage boost. So they'll take themselves specifically to 20% health so they get that and then they won't get hit again. And they'll navigate hordes of enemies knowing exactly how to like coax or trigger an attack animation and then dodge it without using any endurance. It's really impressive. And I think one of the best examples of the talent in games done quick is watching games that you know how to play and seeing people do things that you probably can't fathom were possible if you're just like casually playing the game and not looking into any more information about it.
I can get that. I can dig that. I can dig it, yeah. As Cookie would say.
I mean, I hate watching people play video games normally, but Games Done Quick is just, it's like, I don't know. If you know how to play an instrument, it's like going from playing that instrument to seeing the best person in the field do it. Like if you played violin throughout school and maybe even your like first chair at your high school violin, you're still going to see like a masterful orchestra and their first chair violinist is going to make you feel like you've never actually touched a violin before.
So when you said that these were like minor glitch but non-major glitch, how do they categorize or How do they separate or distinguish the two?
It sounds like the community gets to decide. Like the community of speedrunners essentially decide, does this count as minor or major? Is this game breaking or are you just like essentially you're falling out of the map into another part of the map, but it's accessible for any player to do accidentally and without like intricate understanding of the engine or the game's like infrastructure itself.
So it's not like you have to.
Because that's really what it seems like.
It's not like they're skipping huge portions of the game.
And if they are, they're doing so in a way that would be accessible to almost any player.
Okay.
I think the one that I saw that was most, or the thing that I saw that counts as maybe minor glitching in both of the Dark Souls games for sure is just like catching textures or interactable elements in the map that you were never supposed to be able to like jump to or fall into. But if you just hit it with exactly the right timing and approach, you can essentially like slide into a different area or you can end up on top of a surface that you are never supposed to land on. And so lots of very daring leaps, which also for anybody who's played Dark Souls, they know how like penalizing fall damages in that game. And there's some pretty insane acrobatics going on when these guys descend very vertical level spaces.
So is it just a matter, like, is fall damage calculated to the terrain itself? So if you hit the glitch spot, you won't take damage?
No, I think it's about hitting these spots that are essentially at a point where you wouldn't take, like, instantly lethal fall damage.
Okay, so
because a lot of these guys, it looks like, you know, they're catching on a texture or they're catching on an invisible element in the wall of something, where if you would have dropped all the way, you would have taken enough damage to clear your health bar, but instead they're hitting this invisible part of the wall. It's registering as hitting a surface, and then they're taking a quarter of their health bar instead.
Okay.
Which means that they can, you know, use a healing item and then drop further, but it saves them precious seconds from instead finding another descent, or they should never have been able to drop from that height without lethal fall damage. So they have a pretty hefty shortcut. The Dark Souls 1 for GDQ was, there was one map glitch where they essentially skipped to Sen's Fortress by beating some of the elements from loading in, which I thought would count, like, if I were counting glitches, would probably count as major, but it apparently counted as my minor in the speedrun. But it essentially went from, like, a top-down camera view that's only supposed to exist for when the "you died" comes up, when you take, like, lethal fall damage and fall very far, to instead this very weird top-down view where you can run through a bunch of things before the... before all of Sen's Fortress's elements load in, and then you load the game and it drops you back on the opposite side of the gate at Sen's Fortress without having to open it with bells.
Okay, I remember that being a common thing in Dark Souls 1, going in,
yeah,
like saving and quitting, and then when you load back in, that manipulates the data in a way that you have passed by things or so forth. I recall stuff like that.
Yeah, there were some minor moves like that in Hollow Knight as well. Dark Souls 2, what I saw that was most interesting was actually interactable elements of the environment, like in ways I didn't know that was possible. You know, for the Flexile Sentry, and that, like, there's the Pirate's Cove or whatever that you go to get, that's one route to the like Lone Bastille. You have to ring a bell to bring the ship in. You can just shoot that with an arrow, and that'll bring the ship in. You can skip essentially like an hour of grinding around that area and moving up to the bell instead by just getting close enough to fire an arrow at it, and then the ship comes in anyway.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
So there's some really cool stuff like that where it's like, this is valuable to any casual player who would be interested in playing the game. Like, it's inspired me to go back and probably play the DLCs that I never did. Though it does seem like Scholar of the First Sin, the essentially remake and extra hardening of Dark Souls 2, is not popular in the speedrunner community.
Is it because it's harder then, or?
I think partially because it's a little harder to game, but they also said if you were doing a DLC-based speedrun, in the vanilla version, you get access to all of the DLC areas immediately. Like, you just have to find them, but you already have the key items. In Scholar of the First Sin, they don't give you the key items. Like, you have to hunt for the key items. Oof. And then open the portals. Kind of like in the original Dark Souls, you can't go to Ulisile without, like, doing a bunch of bullshit first.
Right.
Where you, like, kill a crystal golem, and then you have to return, and someone was inside the crystal golem the whole time. And then you have to go find another random, completely unmarked and, like, unremarkable crystal golem to get an item to go back to talk to Dusk of Ulisile to finally get teleported into the DLC. Like, I forgot how insane it was that they had DLCs that you could buy and just actually never know how to access. It's all I got, man.
Okay. I'm gonna put most of the things I did to rest. I haven't started playing any Divinity Original Sin 2 yet, but I think I'll do that at some point soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And you let me know if you want to play some, like, two player to understand the online mechanics before we put together the whole fancy ramen team,
the stream, and so forth. Yeah, but we'll have to do that. I There was one thing I wanted.
Building characters in it. Oh, I was going to say, I just love building characters in it. Like, I'm running into my old Oblivion and Skyrim problems where I want to build like 20 different characters so I can never leave the tutorial area.
So you can make multiple custom characters. Is it recommended if you're playing by yourself just to do one and then pick up NPCs?
I think you can only make one custom character unless there's a mechanic later that I don't understand. You can respec characters. Once you leave the tutorial island, you can completely respec characters, which is just such a nice feature. Like, it's really clever, and I like that they have that added, because I think it gives the game a lot more. It avoids the issue of you having to play the tutorial 6 or 7 times to actually get the build that you want specifically. But when it comes to like custom character creation, you can only make one custom character per player. So you could have 4 people on a custom like 4 people, they're all custom characters on a team, but you'd have to have 4 human players doing it.
Okay. I guess that's basically everything. Have a great... Oh, actually, next week will be a delayed episode for sure because I'll be out of town. So this is probably Scott's first time hearing that too.
Sure is.
So... we'll see what when that episode pops up. Not assuming your schedule and Cookie's schedule, so we'll see what happens next week.
No problem.
Have a week. Have a good week, everybody.
Have a week, everybody. Bye.